Welcome to a special bonus episode of The Long Lost Maverick on Montana Mavericks Behind the Scenes. So today we are joined by the book's author, Christine Rimmer, who unpacks for us the ins and outs of romance writing and spills the tea on what's happening between Gabe and Melody. Hi, Christine. Welcome. Do you want to tell our listeners a little about yourself?
I'm Christine Rimmer. I'm the author of more than 100 Harlequin romances, and we're here today to talk about In Search of the Long Lost Maverick.
Okay, let's get started. So I want to start overly broad and unpack the larger story of the Montana Mavericks. What is the story here, and who are these people?
The Montana Mavericks is a long-running Harlequin series, started way back in the 90s. And it's been enormously popular because you have the cowboy story, which everybody loves, the whole American West, how you have to be self-sufficient and strong and figure out how to make things work, independent spirit kind of story. But then you also have small towns. There have been a number of small towns in the series. And the people may have their issues, they have their legends in the town, but they all in the end pull together to make things work, just like the hero and heroine of each individual story has to learn to pull together and make things work.
And do you think that's what makes the series so popular? Those things that you touched about, the sort of mythic West and the sense of rugged independence connected with that small town allure?
Absolutely. I think those are the two main elements of every Montana Maverick story. So, and if you have that for romance readers, it's perfect because the hero is a major part of any romance. And we know we're probably going to get a cowboy. We're going to get somebody with that independent spirit. And then we love our love stories in community is what it is. People living in their own small town, maybe things have been disappointing for them before romantically, but then they meet this guy and eventually things work out. It's the classic love story with a small town and a cowboy.
Okay, so talk to me about Mel for a moment. I'm curious. And for those, for this is their first exposure to a romance novel, I don't want to spoil the fun by like talking about the character construction, but I kind of do want to spoil the fun by talking about character construction. Is Mel kind of a stand-in for the reader in the sense that they get to live the fantasy of leaving the big city and moving to a small town, and then they find the mysterious cowboy? Like, what is the conceit when you're thinking about the character's construction in that matter? Like, is there an element of wish fulfillment there for the reader?
Absolutely. I do think way back in the day when I first started writing romance, we always said you had to identify with the heroine and want to be with the hero. So there is an identification that happens, that the reader slips into the heart of the heroine. So we have to have a heroine who's interesting, who we care about. It's just the important protagonist character, the main character. She's it. And the hero too.
Okay, let's talk about Gabe Abernathy. What was your inspiration in creating him and his backstory? I mean, what qualities does he possess that makes him so, so irresistible to Mel?
I think Gabe is just a salt of the earth, really good guy. I mean, at heart. And he's a guy who's been, has a mentor in his grandfather. And he has always felt that his grandfather taught him how to be a man. And his grandfather has talked about the great love that he had with his grandmother. And Gabe has been searching for that connection with a special woman. And he kind of gets the feeling Mel is the one from the beginning. She's the resistant one, because of her past and her issues. But he's, I don't know, he's funny, he's patient, he's hot.
He is hot.
He's got everything a woman wants in a life partner. And he's kind of exciting too, because we don't really, you know, we don't know him at first, just like Mel doesn't. So she has to get to know him and trust him. And that's a hard process for her.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question is, is Mel a stand-in for the reader? The reader also gets to have this lover by proxy, in a sense, with Gabe. Like, you know, like like their husband or their partner or their boyfriend will pale in comparison, I guess, to the rugged cowboy who's jumping off the pages all hot.
I hope so, but I don't want my readers not to have the perfect man. So I'm not going that far, but it's a good point.
Right. In romance novels, there's a lot of emphasis on the emotional journey of the characters. Why is that so important, and how does it manifest with Mel? What is her journey?
Well, Mel is the character who is the woman who has been totally wronged. I mean, her fiance cheated on her. She caught him. But not only does she have to leave him, who he still wants her back, because quite frankly, she's a very good businesswoman and she is working for his family's company and they don't want to lose her. So she is dealing with both things, that her career crashed and burned and her relationship crashed and burned. And she doesn't trust. She has no trust. She starts with zero trust. When Gabe comes upon her at the beginning of the story, she's like, why do you want to talk to me? You know, just leave me alone. I'm trying to get through this. She's not up for flirting with the hot cowboy, no matter how hot he is. So her journey is to learn to trust again and to accept that, you know, you have to move on from the big disappointments. It's not that she's not trying at the beginning. It's that she's just so hurt she can't see anything but how do I move on? How do I get out of here? How do I live my life? And she has probably the most growth of the two characters, because she comes all the way around to coming into the community of Bronco and being part of it in a big way. So
there's this sense of longing in the book that helps build desire, so that when Gabe and Mel finally give in to their passions, it's quite explosive. Can you just walk me through how you build desire in a character?
I think an elementary thing for creating a good romance is what we call, it's very basic, but it's the push-pull. If you're a decent writer, it's pretty easy to create the pull, the attraction. Hot guy, funny, he's funny, he's clever, he gets me going, you know, all those things. That's easy. But then what's keeping them apart? You know, that's the thing, the push. And the longing is created by the two things overcoming each other. So she gets excited by him or charmed by him, and then she steps back and says, no, I can't go there because of this. And you have to, as a writer, I try to build the layers of what she's resisting, so she's not just saying the same thing over and over again. You know, my boyfriend cheated on me, I'm done.
Right, right.
She's getting deeper into her own life and her own lack of trust and how she can slowly become able to trust Gabe in particular, this particular man. So the longing is there. It's in that whole thing of building those two alternating points between the push and the pull. Mm-hmm. It's that I can't, I want to, I can't, I want to. Oh, please, why can't I? No, I just can't trust that. That's what it comes from.
Right. And that's the push-pull. That's what gets you through the book, in a sense. The sort of, will they, won't they? When are they going to finally?
In a way, they give in. But they give in to their hearts, you know, and then their minds that are worried about survival and is this person going to mess me over, have to catch up. So it's really, it can be very involving if properly handled, because you really don't know, even though you know this is a romance and they're going to get together, you wonder, how will these people work this out? That's how it should be the whole time. You understand why she's pulling away. You understand why she can't resist. You have to feel, it can't feel artificial. It really has to feel like she is a woman who's longing for a man she feels she can't have.
Yeah. And the greater the push, I guess, the more satisfaction there is when they actually finally consummate their feelings.
Definitely. It really, in fact, that's what we call the most popular romances are what we call slow burn. That means you you don't just, if you throw them into bed together, you might even just skip the love scene there. You would just go to cut to after, because you don't want them to be that physically intimate so soon in their journey. So, or I don't. I mean, you know, you know how it is with any art form. People succeed in doing the things all the rules tell you you can't do. It's good to be respectful of the rules and to remember, well, is this going to work better here if I just cut to right afterwards? And most of the time it does, if you're going to have a love scene too early on. With Mel and Gabe, there wasn't a problem because she was so resistant. They weren't going to have a love scene early on. So that worked out okay. And that wasn't me trying to figure out, well, how am I going to say that they did this? Because it's cool if they've had a love scene, you can be thinking about what it was like. And it's also pulls them toward each other more. But in this book, no. Longing for a long time.
With Mel, you do such a good job of capturing her vulnerability before and after. How important is that to capture, as well as the moments of casual intimacy that exist between them afterwards?
I think that shows that the relationship is developing. There's no way she'd be, if for some reason she'd been so overwhelmed that she decided to have sex with Gabe at the beginning, I can't see her doing that, but she would immediately just pull away. There would be no afterplay. There would be no touching. There would be no warmth, because she would immediately be thrown back into her mindset, which is don't trust men. So when they do make love later, then the casual touching and that kind of liking each other, physical intimacy about affection, really, it tells us that they do have potential as a couple. Because you can't work together if you're just only thinking about, oh my God, he's so hot, I just want to be in his arms. You also have to be thinking how much you like him and be able to talk to him honestly about yourself and listen to him. So, yeah.
What, in your opinion, are the key ingredients in a well-crafted romance story? And I know that we've gone through a bunch of them, the push and pull and all these things, but just, you know, what are the boxes that you tick?
The hero and heroine, of course, they're attracted to each other. That's fairly easy to do. But their conflicts have to kind of match up so that they're actually both the antagonist for each other and the mentor for each other on their journey to be a couple. Does that make sense? So Mel, she doesn't trust men. So she really needs a man like Gabe, who's patient and willing to show her what could be if she were to trust again. Gabe, he has this grandfather who now has dementia, and he finds out from Melanie that there might be some connection between Melanie and his grandfather. So he gets into the mystery of what information does she have that I can find out more about my grandfather, whom I can go visit, I can love, I can support, but I really can't even talk to him anymore because he's lost in his own mind. What happened to him back when? So she is the solution to his life mystery, and he is the one who can bring her onward from being messed over by the last boyfriend. Hers is a more basic romance situation. His is a mystery, an overarching mystery.
So I'm sure a lot of our listeners want to know, how did you first come to Harlequin? What was your introduction to romance as the creator?
As a creator, actually, when I started out, I wasn't any good at it, but I really wanted to be an actress. I have a theater degree. I went to New York and I suffered and waited tables. And then I came back to LA and tried to make it there. And the whole time I'm reading romances, because that's where my happy place is. So I go, wait a minute. You know, and then I started writing plays, and that was okay. I had a readings, yippee, yippee, but I wanted to make a living doing what I love. And here I'm reading romances to console myself and to get swept away. And all of a sudden, I don't know when it occurred to me, maybe I should write romances, you know? So I got a book and how to write romance fiction for love and money, and read it and wrote a book. And eventually, it took a while, but I did sell that book to Harlequin. So that's how I started kind of looking for my place where I could do something I really loved and make a living.
That's an amazing story. Thank you so much for sharing. And I think this is a great place to end it.
Terrific. Take care. Bye-bye.
That's all we have time for today on Montana Mavericks Behind the Scenes. We hope you enjoyed this special bonus episode. And join us next week as we delve into the original music created by our roster of up-and-coming country stars and get ready for a few musical surprises along the way. All right, see you then.